Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Health Radio, wherever you are in this crazy world. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
Imagine this, you're diagnosed with hormone-driven breast cancer. You get a double mastectomy, and then a year later, you're diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. That's the bad news. The really good news is that today, there's no evidence of disease, which even astounded her oncologist. And here to tell her story is Nikki Hardy from Mississippi. Nikki, thanks for doing this. We greatly appreciate it.
Hi, Ian.
Nikki, let's start with your breast cancer. Take us back to March of 2017 and tell us the story of your breast cancer.
Okay, basically, I had always been a very active person. I was even a fitness competitor, or a national fitness competitor for that. I don't think I even shared that with Corey, but I was a very avid fitness professional, and I got even went to Los Angeles to compete in different fitness competitions and won a few, not national level, but other level. But anyway, basically, I was a very fit person, ran 10 miles a day at one point and did all the weights and clean eating and things like that. And that was back in 1996 through 99 that I did fitness competitions. So fast forward 2017, I wasn't, of course, as active, but I still tried to walk and do weights. And I've always just tried to be a fit person as much as possible. So what happened was I didn't even discover it. My husband discovered the lump because I'd never had a mammogram ever. And so I was just like, whoa, you know, what is this? And for about 5 or 6 months, you know, I didn't do anything, but it was always on my mind. And I was thinking, and my husband kept saying, you need to go to the doctor. You need to get that checked out. You've got to get that, you know, he kept pressing me because I'm just not a doctor person. I just don't ever go. I've never been sick that much. So I finally went and, you know, she felt and palpitated and she was like, it's moving. So I don't think there's anything really to it. But I'm going to order a mammogram, and so that's what we did. So I go to get my first mammogram ever, and I think it was the 3D version, or I believe, and it came back that, you know, suspicious. So I was immediately sent to get a biopsy done. It was a few days later, and the radiologist that did the biopsy, I actually knew him. I knew his sister because I did dance with her all my life. And I asked him when he was finished, I said, what do you think? And he said, I've seen thousands of these. And he said, I want to tell you right now, it doesn't look good. And so I was like, and so I immediately broke down in tears, you know, like, oh my God, you know, don't tell me this. So, got the results back, and it did come back, and it was breast cancer. It was estrogen and progesterone-driven breast cancer. So, of course, you know, I'm sure y'all hear these stories all the time. It just, you know, it sideswipes you. You're like, you know, it's like life after that is like life before cancer and life after. I mean, it just completely stops you in your tracks and you just rethink your whole existence. And I don't know, it's hard to explain, but you just, fear is just consumes your body, you know? And so anyway, that was a big part of it. And I'd like to go into that part later because I think that fear is something that is a very important thing to overcome, and it.
Yeah, Nikki, if I just want to interrupt here, you make a very good point because we've talked to hundreds of people who have had cancer, and when they're told they have a life-threatening disease, the fear consumes them for a number of weeks. They can't think clearly, and that's why a lot of people put their health into the hands of a doctor instead of reevaluating themselves and taking the charge of their own
Yeah, because they're
health.
In a state of fear and they're in a state of shock.
Right.
That's
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like you do things when you're in fear mode that you probably wouldn't do otherwise. You're susceptible to any kind of influence. I mean, especially a doctor. And doctor holds, they hold so much power over you. You know, they're the ones that give you the diagnosis. And, you know, that's a whole nother story. It's like, I feel like that when they diagnose people, they need to take that into account, that they really hold life in their hands, because one drop of hope, from my experience, just goes a really long way. And so, yeah, definitely doctors need to realize that emotions affect the body in so many ways. Y'all probably know that. It's just...
Nikki, why did you opt for a double mastectomy?
Okay, so after I digested everything, and I've had kids, I've got three wonderful kids, and I wasn't planning on having any more. I'm 53 now. And so I was kind of done with childbearing and raising. And so I just decided that instead of just taking one off, that I would just go ahead and do both, because I didn't want to have to deal with it again in the future. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'll just get them both off and I'll be done with this and move on. That was my thought on it. And
now, after your mastectomy, when did the lung nodules appear?
Okay, so after the surgery, my surgeon basically took my case to an oncologist, and they took it before a board because, let me just rewind here. I basically said no chemo, no radiation. I told them this up front. Every doctor I saw, I said, I will not do, and I've always had that in the back of my mind, that I would not, because I just felt like I'd seen enough cancer in my life, and it seemed like chemo was never it's not a cure. It's just basically palliative is what I've come to understand. People can come out ahead on the other side sometimes. I'm not downplaying it for some people, but I do believe that your immune system is the one that basically heals you in the end. You know, that's what's going to cure you in the end. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to do chemo radiation. That surgeon took it before the oncology board in Jackson, Mississippi. They basically said she's good to go. She's doing great. She's had no history of breast cancer. She tested negative for the BRCA gene. So, you know, we don't feel that she needs the chemo and radiation if she doesn't want it. So done with that. So he encouraged me to go to the oncologist just to visit, just to talk to her. So I kind of went against my wishes. I really didn't want to be put into the system per se, you know, because it's like once you get diagnosed with cancer, it's like everything's related to cancer from then on out. So, but I did agree to go see her, and he said, well, she's on the more, lenient side. She doesn't force chemo or radiation. She's more patient oriented. So she tends to let you dictate how you want to have things done. So went to her, and I really liked her. And so we scheduled a CAT scan, because that was actually, you know, I did want a CAT scan at that point to just make sure that it was clear, that there was no evidence of cancer in my body at all. And so after that is when the lung nodules showed up. That's what revealed the lung nodules. And, you know, even they were really small. I'll say that they were like probably 4 to 6 millimeters. So they weren't even really close to centimeter. She really thought that it was not breast cancer that had spread in my lungs, because I had such a good outcome in the surgery and my lifestyle and, you know, my history. So we watched them. We watched the lung nodules. She just scanned me like every 3 to 6 months for about a year. And so they started kind of growing. And then one scan showed they shrunk, and we were all happy, doing the happy dance about that. And then they grew again. And so I finally, my intuition just said, I'm ready to get a biopsy. I want to see what these things are made of. And so we scheduled the biopsy, and sure enough, the PR had fallen off of the driven, you know, what drove the cancer, and it was only estrogen driven in my lungs.
So this was a metastasis then?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So as you can imagine, I was floored. I think I had kind of started really preparing myself for that because of all the scans we had done. And it was just, I was like, you know, if this is not cancer, I don't know what it could be. Cause I mean, it was just kind of, they just popped up and they were growing and shrinking and then growing some more. And so, yeah, it was, and then of course it took me from stage one, literally to stage four, like no stops in between. Straight to stage four.
That must have been a terrible emotional shock for you. You dealt with breast cancer, you had a double mastectomy, and all of a sudden you're stage four lung cancer.
Oh, yeah. It was harder that time around to get the diagnosis because I knew what that meant. I mean, stage four is terminal. And I had to go through, I guess you call it the dark night of the soul, but it was like several nights of just wrestling with the thought of death and the thought, just there's so many emotions that go throughout your body that you just don't know where the truth is. You don't know what your truth is. You don't know. It's just, there's just so many unknowns. And so I took a trip to California to see an integrative doctor, and she put me on some pancreatic enzymes and some mistletoe injections, because by that time I had started watching your show and Chris Wark. Mm-hmm. Your two shows were my biggest catalyst, I felt like, to get a plan for my healing. I can't count the number of cannabis health radio shows I watched and listened to, so many great testimonies. And, you know, that was my hope.
Yeah, it's fantastic to hear. You said something in the notes that you sent us that I thought was very profound. It was that a very loud voice said to you, if you change your life, you will heal.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Well, I guess for so many years, I was a single parent for a lot of years, and I had three wonderful kids, but it's just, it requires a lot. So, you know, I felt like I was just always stressed out, always, and I turned to like wine just every night and alcohol just to kind of numb myself to all of the stresses of life. It was kind of like my time to relax and unwind from all the stresses of the day. So, you know, internally, I guess it's that little voice told me all along that you're going down the wrong road. You know, you're not, I'm not saying that alcohol is a bad thing, but I think the way I was using it was to get a lot of stress relief, and I was using too much, you know. So, and then plus just the stress factor, just the way I thought, was just very toxic. So, when I got the diagnosis, it was kind of like it hit me square in the face. Like, you either change now or you're coming home, you know? And so I had to really ask myself a lot of hard questions. Like, do I really want to live? And what am I willing to do to live? And am I?
Yeah, those are very good questions to ask.
Yeah,
yourself.
And am I willing to do what it takes to live? Because once you get go down that road of just, it was a habit you know, because your thoughts become your habits. And so anyway, I went, like I said, it was many nights of just wrestling with my mind. And is it worth it? You know, will it even help? I mean, because when you hear a stage four, you think, well, no, whatever I do, it may not make a difference, you know, still. But in the end, I decided very emphatically that I wanted to live and I was going to do whatever it took to live. And to do it without killing my body even more and hurting my body and my immune system. So I had to figure out a way to incorporate even some mainstream medicines, which I think I mentioned that I'm on, but there's a very low side effect profile with them. So anyway, where was I going with that? I can't remember. Okay, so getting through the diagnosis and deciding I was going to do everything it took. You know, I listened to your shows. I listened to everyone, especially the breast cancer shows that you had people on. I listened to Chris Warwick and his, and some of you had the same people on the show. So it was very interesting. And so I took a lot of the information from your shows, the testimonies and your shows and Chris Warwick's. And I immediately just started, I guess the first thing, clean eating. You know, I thought I ate clean, but I really didn't. I ate a lot of processed things. I didn't, you know, when you kind of analyze your everything that you've done up until that point, you see that, you know, even chicken, meat, I mean, it has all kinds of hormones and antibiotics in it that can affect your system, that get built up in your system. So that was the first thing I did, was really cut out meat. Went pretty much plant-based. And then I found a source for cannabis, which I'm not going to mention who it is, but anyway, because I don't live in a legal state, but I've had to be creative about getting my medicine that way. I started taking cannabis. It was cannabis oil, the black tar looking stuff in the syringe. And I started out with like a rice grain, like they recommend. And I think I built up to probably half a gram a day. And I was switching from like shishka berry was the main strain that I used. It was a good mix of, I think, THC to CBD. I'm not sure exactly what the ratios are. But that was the strain of preference for me.
How many times a day would you take it, Nikki?
I was only taking it at night because it just made me sleep much. And I'll be honest with you, I've had the best sleep ever since I started cannabis. And I used to never sleep. I mean, it was a good day if I got like 4 hours of sleep, because I'm just not a very heavy sleeper.
Nikki, that's not good.
It's not. And you know, I think that plays a part in cancer proliferation as well, from what I've learned, is that sleep.
So what were you sleeping, about 8-10 hours a day?
Yeah. When I started taking cannabis. Yes. So that was very instrumental. I felt, you know, when you get a good night's sleep, when you're well rested, you can think more clearly. Mm-hmm. And when you think more clearly, you can make better decisions. You know, and especially in my situation, I felt like I needed a plan, like my own plan that I could work. And does that make sense?
Well, it sounds like you developed a plan, and your plan was to change your eating habits, which is excellent. And the second part of your plan was to consume cannabis, which would help your body. So you were on the road to recovery. How long before you really noticed that the cannabis was working for you, in addition to your diet?
Yeah. Probably 6 months into, or maybe, well, I got a lot of benefits before 6 months because just sleeping was a huge benefit for me. And so I guess about 6 months later, though, I'm trying to think back to my timeline. So I got the second diagnosis in 2018, the middle of 2018. And then I started taking the cannabis. So let's see, 2019. See, I just got my clear scan in 2020. So, and in the middle of that, I mean, I was, cannabis was consistent for me, right? And let me just kind of, I'm just going to kind of go down this road of other ways that cannabis helped me, because again, going back to the mental part of it, you know, the cannabis helped me to relax and think clearly. And so that was something I was not, had not been a part of my life. I mean, I had just been kind of living out of my head for so many years and just reacting to everything. And so when you take cannabis, you can tend to, you know, it relaxes you, and you can, again, I feel like I'm being redundant, but it allows you to think clearly. So,
you know, Nikki, it sounds to me like what the cannabis was doing for you, I suspect, and my terminology will be all wrong here, but let me throw it out to you. Your body was really on fire because you were under stress. You weren't sleeping to give your body a chance to heal, and you were consuming food that wasn't good for you, that your body had to fight with. And as a result of consuming cannabis, you got a good night's sleep. You changed your diet to help your body recover. And the cannabis was relaxing you. Which you desperately needed over probably a number of decades, given the fact that you were a competitive, a fitness competitor over the years. So all of these things combined just gave your body a chance to heal yourself.
Does it does make sense? And, you know, we had these scans every 3 months. And like, she started scanning me every 6 months once they kind of stabilized. But I tend to think that the cannabis helped stabilize them because they never grew. My lung nodules never grew past like 1.4 centimeters or 14 millimeters. So, I mean, there's no evidence to show that. But, you know, mostly when cancer spreads, it gets more aggressive. And in my case, it did not. It kind of stayed. It was stable, pretty much. I mean, it grew a little bit here and there, but it remained pretty stable throughout.
Was your doctor aware that you were doing oil?
Yes, my oncologist in Jackson was aware, and she even notated it in my file.
Was she supportive?
You know, she was, I guess you could say she was, but she never really wanted to hear about it. She never wanted to hear. She would tell me, she said, you're my best patient. She said, there's people out in the waiting room that would give their right arm for you to be you. But, you know, even with that said, she never wanted to know what I was doing, you know, and I think it's because, you know, doctors, their hands are so tied with FDA, they can't. So afraid they'll lose their license.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. Yeah, but your oncologist said something really interesting. We can usually stop it from progressing, the lung cancer, and stabilize it for a while, but we never see anyone go from stage four to no evidence of disease.
And that was my second oncologist. My first one.
Oh, that was your. What happened to the first one?
I switched because we just started really butting heads. I just felt like she was condescending towards me too much, and you know, I said to my husband, I'm not a dummy. I said, I want to partner in my health, not somebody that's just gonna, that I feel like I've been beaten up every time I walk out the door. And so I had gotten some some friends had told me about an oncologist here in my own hometown that I should just get a consultation with. And so I did. And she was, and it's like when I first met her, I said, I just want to know, just before we even go further, that you're going to be my partner and you're not going to dictate and you're going to let me, you know, do what I'm doing. And I said, I've researched everything that I'm doing on the side. I said, so if you can handle that, then we'll be good, you know, because I had dealt with my other oncologist, you know, every time I would mention anything natural, she would almost laugh at me. And, you know, as a cancer patient, you know, you don't want to feel, we're fighting for our lives, you know, and
yeah, you don't want to be belittled.
It was not a joke to me, you know, and I would, it's just like, for instance, I was taking turkey tail mushrooms and I'd read lots of evidence that it helped to stop or slow the spread of cancer and it built up your T cells. So to me, that's pretty big stuff. So, you know, I mentioned that to her, but she literally cackled.
And,
yeah. And, so anyway, cause I incorporate, like, my approach to my cancer has been not only cannabis, but many, many, modalities, I guess, and natural supplements that are proven. I kind of just took a blanket approach, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because I was...
Nikki, how is your husband been through all this?
Oh, he's been my rock, literally. He's a pilot. He's a commercial pilot. So, you know, I always told him, I was like, you're always the calm, steady one flying through a storm. You know, he's one of the best pilots, I think, around. And I said, that's what you've been for me. You know, you've been my steady. Because when I was freaking out and, you know, just feeling like my feet weren't even touching the ground, he grounded me. And the rest of my family were wonderful, too. But, yeah, he's been such a rock for me. And that, I think that's very important as well, to have a support system that says, hey, you're doing the right thing and just keep on doing it, you know, no matter what the doctor, however she may make fun of you or whatever, you're doing the right thing. He just was like my stay the course person.
Yeah, that's very important, because when Corey and I first started this podcast 4 years ago, and we quit for 2 years, but in the early part of it, we interviewed this woman who was only on the podcast for about 15 minutes. She was an elderly woman, and we kind of saved it for a bit because we thought we'd tie it in with another one. But she had some serious cancerous issues. Corey, can you remember what,
yeah,
you know who I'm talking about?
Lung with mets to the brain and bones, or brain and liver, one of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she was doing really, really well on cannabis oil, but her family talked her out of it, and so she stopped and she died.
Yeah, it did. Brain radiation, and she died, I think, was the story. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. So you need a support group behind you who believe in you, who, I mean, you've done some incredible research, as it has a number of people that we've talked to, and you know intuitively what's right for your body. Nobody else knows that, but you do.
Nikki, do you continue to take cannabis oil now that you're clear?
I do.
Good girl.
Well, I will continue it forever. You know, not only for my cancer, but for sleep and for my mental, just my mental state.
Mental well-being.
Yes. Yeah. And I will say this about what you just mentioned about belief. I heard you say that word, belief. And, you know, I firmly believe that whatever you believe in will work for you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because if you're doubting it, then your body kind of does its own thing. It's kind of like you're going back to that mind, body, spirit connection. You know, if you're saying one thing and believing another, your body's confused. And but if you're total and complete alignment with what you're believing is going to work, I feel like your body just kind of falls in line with that, and commits to healing. You know, I've always been adamant about no chemo. I don't judge anybody for taking chemo, of course, but I just felt like it was not the right thing for me. And I think that, just like Ian said, if you just have to get very comfortable and know your body, know yourself. And, you know, when you're in fear mode, that's kind of hard to do. So that's why it's so important to work through that mentally.
You know, Nikki, when people have lung cancer, Corey has talked to a number of them, and one of the best ways to deal with it, correct me if I'm wrong, Corey, is they take the cannabis they take it rectally through suppository. Mm-hmm. Have you ever
done that? I have. Yeah.
You don't get high.
You don't. And, you know, and I've heard there's a lot of really good benefits from taking it like that. But I didn't do a whole lot like that. I mostly took it by mouth. But yeah, there were a few, because I was incorporating everything from coffee enemas and, you know, I was just doing it all, I felt like. Yeah. No, it's like stage 4 is a big deal. So I feel like you really just, and especially hormone driven, you know, that's kind of a tricky one. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's like all hands on deck, really.
Yeah. You have to throw everything you've got at it.
Yes, definitely. So like the mistletoe injections, the pancreatic enzymes, which, you know, the pancreatic enzymes I was able to get on Amazon. So they're very easy to get. I will tell you, I'll tell you about this too. I incorporated some off-label medications from a book. I don't know if I need to say it on air, but it was a book I read, and it was incorporating, the lady had used various off-label medications to starve her cancer, but they were very cheap, safe ones. And so I started trying to find some metformin and some propranolol. Those were two that starves a cancer pathway. And through her book, I learned that cannabis actually starves the MMP-2 pathway. Are y'all familiar with that?
No.
Yeah, it's a
Corey might be. I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't either. But I know that it's part of the, I guess, the metabolic pathway, because cancer has to thrive, and so you give it oxygen, it can't thrive because it's anaerobic. But the cannabis blocks or helps block that MMP-2 pathway. And I don't know if it's I can't remember if it's like a glutamine pathway. There's all kinds of different pathways.
I had a conversation. I mean, this sounds familiar because I had a conversation with Dr. Bob Melamed the other day. And he'd be right over all of this, and but it's a little over my head.
Right.
Bob gets very technical.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as cannabis, too, I just thought about this. Since cancer does thrive in an anaerobic environment, cannabis has allowed me to breathe more deeply. Like, it's amazing how you realize how you're not getting good deep breaths in until you take cannabis, and it just completely opens up your chest. And, you know, and in my mind, I wonder, like, if that has helped me as well, because if oxygen is getting to the tissues, then that's healing.
Yeah.
Nikki, I love your story. It's a fantastic story of breast cancer, lung cancer, you taking control of your health, and Corey and I both greatly appreciate you for telling the story, and keep up the good work.
I also appreciate you having me on your show, and I'll continue to watch your episodes because I learn something new every time, you know, and I think that's key, is just getting the knowledge to take care of yourself and do what's right for you.
Right.
So
Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you, too. Y'all have a great day.
At Cannabis Health Radio, we'd like to thank our listeners for supporting us and sharing our podcasts with others who would benefit from these testimonials about the healing power of cannabis. And you can do it. Just send a friend some information about Cannabis Health Radio, and you never know, you can save another person's life, which is probably why we do this podcast. Well, I know it's why we do this podcast, so more and more and more people around the world can hear about the benefits of the daily use of cannabis. And also, don't forget that we have a YouTube channel, and share that with others who you think may be interested. And on our YouTube channel, we have over 9,000 subscribers now, and we want to hit 10,000 by the end of the summer, by the end of August. So help us out and do that. And if you'd like to contribute to Cannabis Health Radio, you can do so for as little as $5 a month on Patreon or on our website, cannabishealthradio.com. You can make a one-time donation, and we greatly appreciate anyone who wants to do that. And for those who have done that, we thank you very, very much. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Cannabis Health Radio.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you.